it's solitary.
Well, thanks, Andy, and thanks very much for the invitation. It was nice to be set a task, a particular topic to talk on. The difficulty then became when I was sitting on the train very early on this morning thinking about what to talk about, and nothing really came to mind. I have to admit that I found the task that you set me to talk about how to give a good presentation at the conference much more difficult than I thought I was going to do when I began it. And I think that's because I've never really thought about it before. I've never really had cause to reflect on what it is that you do when you write a paper for a conference and what it is that you do when you try to turn that paper into a presentation that you deliver orally at a conference. So it's been, I think, quite an interesting task for me on my journey in this morning to try to get to grips with some of the things that I've probably done instinctively for a number of years during my career, and to see whether what I do actually represents good advice for what you should be doing. And I think in some instances, I probably do know what I'm talking about in this respect, and my experiences might bear repetition and replication by you. But on other instances, my advice will be to stay clear of the sorts of things that I've done in my career, and to organise your time when it comes to writing papers for conferences much better than I've historically been able to do. So let me begin. I'm going to deal with hopefully both of the elements that are involved in paper presentations at conferences, because it is a curious aspect of the job that we do, that this is something that does involve two distinct disciplines. There's writing the paper and presenting the paper. And the two things require rather different thought processes from you. And then related in a very important way, when it comes to trying to engage an audience to become more familiar with the work that you're doing, clearly you need them to read the paper in its entirety. But the only way you're going to get them to read the paper in its entirety is to impress them sufficiently in the presentation that you give them that it will be worth their time reading your paper in its entirety. So there are important ways of using the paper itself to make you more well known within the profession, to make sure that people are familiar with the work that you're doing, to get them discussing the work that you're doing, also to get them to volunteer help towards you. That's one of the real benefits of writing a good conference paper, that people will pick up on themes that you're trying to discuss and they will want to engage you in conversation about that. And that conversation often comes or often materialises as an additional form of supervisory help that you receive. So you want to get people reading your work in the first place, and the only way to do that is through the presentation that you actually deliver at the conference itself. That this will be the first chance that most people have had to see you, to hear your arguments, to meet you, to see what sort of a person you are, and to become familiar with the sort of work that you're doing. So the presentation, even though it will take you much less time to write the presentation than it will do the paper, is equally important as a form of engagement. So what I want to do is talk briefly, I think I've got about 20 minutes altogether, haven't I, Andy? So I'll talk briefly, I'll talk briefly about both elements, about the presentation and about the paper itself, to see whether there are some handy tips that I might be able to pass on to you. I'll start with the presentation. Now, for the people that saw me for my training module yesterday, we spent 2 hours talking about presentations. And some of the tips are the same again. So I'll not go over those in too great a detail. But some of them do bear repeating, because the way in which to give a good presentation at a conference is often also the way to give a good presentation of your PhD work in class presentations and also at the first year review. In both instances, I think the biggest issue about the presentation is to get your timing right, to make sure that the limited time that's at your disposal is used as profitably as you can. It will be the case, usually, at conferences, that chairs are quite strict on their timekeeping. That in almost all instances, you will sit on a panel with probably 3 people there. There will be 3 papers to be delivered and sufficient time will need to be left for questions, all within possibly an hour and a half session time. So when the conference chair tells you that you've got 15 minutes to deliver your paper, they usually do mean 15 minutes to deliver your paper. Now, some really big names always manage to circumvent this, and they will just talk forever. But for the rest of us mere mortals, and certainly for people just starting out like you, conference chairs are not likely to be as generous with allowing you just to talk over everyone else's time. They will make you stick to the time that you've been given. And when they give you the 2-minute warning, as most conference chairs will do, to get you to try to begin to wrap up, they will mean it. So the 2-minute warning doesn't mean have another 15 minutes from here. It means please have finished within the next 2 minutes because it's someone else's turn. And it's soul destroying if you spent 3 or 4 weeks preparing the paper, writing it from scratch, getting it into a situation where you're really quite proud of it. If you get to the 2-minute warning and you suddenly realise that you haven't yet told the audience what your argument is. So you need to organise your timing in such a way where you get the argument right to the fore, right at the very beginning. It's very, very important that you're able to work on your timings and make sure that you spend that time profitably in terms of getting your argument out and making it clear to the audience exactly what your argument is. Now, in terms of finding out how long that you will have to present your paper, almost all conferences have a pre-distributed conference programme. The conference programme will tell you who the chair for your particular panel is. It will also almost certainly give you the email contact details of the chair of your panel. And nobody minds at all receiving a polite request for information about how much time they're likely to give you, because different people run panels in slightly different ways when it comes to chairing them. If it's me, I always think that at least half the time should be left for questions. So only half the time is given to the 3 paper presenters, and I just divide it equally between the 3 of them. But some other people think that the presentation itself is more important than the question time, and so will err on a slightly longer side in terms of the time that they allow for you. So it's always sensible to check. It's always sensible to email them to see exactly how long you're going to get, because it can differ quite considerably. I've been at conferences where on a 3-person panel I've been given 25 minutes, which I thought was astonishing. Only 15 minutes left for questions at the end. I think Chris and Ben, you were at the Beta conference before Christmas. One of you only had about 10 minutes, didn't you? 10 minutes, that's not very long. So you need to know beforehand how long you're going to get so you can tailor your argument to the time that's available to you to give it. So one piece of advice is please practice your timings so that you always leave enough time to get your argument out. One question that this immediately raises is whether you should follow a pre-prepared script. So one way of getting your timing absolutely spot on is to write everything out in longhand, write it in the form of a script, and just simply read the script word for word and use that as your means of giving your presentation. And you will see that quite a few people do this at conferences. And it runs across the spectrum as well. A number of PhD students do that. I think it's one way of controlling the nerves, because it means that you don't have to trust yourself to remember what it is that you want to say, because what you want to say is on the paper in front of you. So all you have to do is to be able to read it. But you also see that some very, very significant professorial figures within the profession also continue just to read out their presentations at conferences, that they've never quite conquered their nerves sufficiently to trust themselves to simply talk freeform around a set of loosely compiled notes. So that's always an option. Should you do this, however, I think it's understandable if you choose the option, but there's definitely a trade-off with how much you can engage your audience if you've got your head down reading a script word for word. I think the best presentations at conferences, and this will not necessarily be how you will do it in the first few times that you're still finding your feet when it comes to conference presentations, I think the best presentations at conferences are given by people who manage to keep their head up throughout the whole of their presentation So they keep looking in the faces and in the eyes of the people that they're trying to engage. That's the way to engage people. And that's what you want to do with your ideas. You don't want your ideas to turn into such a dry rendition of a script that it becomes very, very difficult for your audience to really, really enthuse about the ideas that you're trying to deliver to them. You want them almost to be drawn into the performance that you're giving when it comes to delivering your paper. So I think there's quite a sensible compromise to be drawn here. I think it's sensible, certainly when you're just starting out, when you're giving your first few conference presentations, to have a written presentation at the preparation stage. So to write it out. Write it out in a way that you can practice in your mind, you can practice your timings, you can envisage what it is that you're going to say to your audience, so you can go through the preparation stage with a fully written out script. But at the same time, when it comes to going into the actual panel to deliver the paper, maybe just rely on a set of more loosely constructed notes that give you the primary headings that you want to talk around. And hopefully, having worked through the script in your mind again and again and again and again, you'll be able to recall all the things that were on the script. So you can then deliver it almost as if you were reading it from memory, but with your head in the air, being able to see the reactions on the faces of the audience that you're trying to engage. Because one of the things that you will probably want to do is respond to the visible signs that you're getting from your audience. If your audience looks confused, it might be because you're confusing them slightly. If you're confusing them slightly, then probably you need to explain a little bit more slowly, a little bit more simply, exactly what the essence of your argument is. But you can only tell that your point is not quite coming across as you're hoping it's going to do if you can see the reaction on people's faces when you're making the delivery of the presentation in the first place. Equally, there can be points in your presentation that in your own mind, when you've been practicing them, are really rather routine points. Maybe you think it's straightforward, quite simple. And you can be surprised at just how much attention you can read into the faces of your audience when you get to those points. So something that you think you can skip over really quite quickly might be really enthusing your audience. They might be giving you visible signals that this is what they want to hear more about. And that gives you the encouragement then, if you've spotted those signals because you're looking them in the face, that gives you the encouragement to really go to town on emphasising those points that your audience is showing you that they're really interested in. And that's the way to get a really good feeling out of giving a presentation. If you can convince yourself at the end of your presentation that you've satisfied your audience's needs, then you will come away feeling really, really good about yourself. Conference presentations don't get better than that. The really important thing to do in this respect, I think, is to concentrate on getting your argument across as clearly as possible. Sure, you've got to contextualise your argument with respect to the literature broadly. You've got to be able to show how it fits in with other people's opinions. But it's the argument itself that must be placed centre stage in your presentation. Don't spend too much time telling the audience about other people's opinions and other people's reading of the literature. Allow yourself to be comfortable in the fact that you're talking to fellow experts on this literature, so they will know it as well. What they're interested in is understanding your point of departure from those usual interpretations. So a conference presentation is it puts you in a situation where if you're bold enough, if you're confident enough, you have much more latitude just to concentrate on your arguments rather than on the literature as a whole. So this is one thing for the first years. It's different when it comes to thinking how conference presentations match up to first year review presentations. You will need to be able to demonstrate to me and other members of the first year review panel that you know how your work fits into the broader literature by telling me and the rest of the panel about that broader literature. I don't think you have any of those sorts of pressures when it comes to giving conference presentations. I'll repeat, you'll want to, at times, contextualise your own arguments with respect to the literature, but your audience has come to hear what you want to argue rather than to hear you give a review of the literature more broadly. So if you can focus on those sorts of things, I think that that will pay dividends for you. Now, one way of placing your argument right at the forefront of your audience's minds is to begin straight away by trying to link the content of your paper to the theme of the panel. All panels will have a title. You will find yourself on a panel with, hopefully, closely themed papers. So if there are three or there are four papers, they should be four papers that, in some way, speak to one another. Okay, you won't have had prior engagement with your fellow panelists. You won't have coordinated the way that you're going to present your work to make those parallels clear and obvious to the audience. But even from the fact that you appear on the same theme title, there should be things to link your paper to other people's papers. Most conferences and workshops also have their own title. So there's an identifiable theme to both conferences and workshops, as well as to the panels within them. If you're not presenting first, then this gives you an opportunity. It might allow you to flag up how your argument relates to those that have already been made by your fellow panelists. Okay, this requires you to think on your feet, but you will impress your audience by being able to contextualise your own argument in relation to what they've already heard other people say their arguments are. Also, when you go to conferences, if your paper appears on a panel that's organised by a specialist group often arrange for multiple panels on similar themes to be organised. So in other words, there might be almost a route through the whole conference, listening to panels that are constructed around related intellectual themes. So if you're appearing on one of the later panels, you might also in your presentation refer back to some of the discussions that were had in previous panels. Because one of the things that you will find at conferences is if people start going to the panels organised by a particular specialist group, they will continue to go to all of those panels. So even though there might be 500 or 600 people at the conference, you could very well find that the other 20 people that are in the same room as you are always in the same room as you, because you and they are specialist panel groupies and you've all followed each other around to exactly the same panels. So it is possible when you experience that to be able to extend the engagement of the conversation between one panel and another, because everyone else will remember what the discussion was on the previous panel as well. So anything that you can do in this respect to contextualise your argument with relation to the contents, the titles of the panel, the conference or the specialist group panels, whatever it is, I think that that's a good idea. It also makes it easier for members of the audience to ask a single question for the whole panel. And that's also a good thing to be able to encourage within your audiences. Because one thing that is a bit, it's unfortunate, it can be a little bit depressing. If you've put all this effort in, you've written a good paper, you've given a good presentation, and then suddenly nobody asks you a question. And it might not be your fault at all that nobody asks you a question. But then what do? You're sitting on the end of your panel, you're feeling like a bit of a spare part, nobody's talking to you. What do you do? Some people think, well, I'm not in the spotlight, that's great. Please, don't ask me a question. But you don't get that satisfaction from the engagement of your audience if you don't get asked any questions. So if you can relate your paper to the way that the panel itself is constructed, it does make it easier for people to ask questions that apply not only to one person on the panel, but to the whole panel, or at least to the majority of that panel. So that's a good tip as well, I think. The only other advice I would have about presentations, looking at the time, sorry about this, is to get your timing right, obviously. It's not to over-elaborate. The argument should be delivered fairly simply, if at all possible. yes, it will be a complex intellectual argument, but the more that you can deliver that complex intellectual argument in a prose which is straightforward for your audience to understand, the better. Hopefully you will already be getting into the habit of writing using prose that's as straightforward as possible. Otherwise you will just confuse your supervisors. We won't have a clue what you're talking about, and we will ask you to go away and rewrite it in more suitable prose. And this is never more important than in relation to a conference paper presentation. Think of what it means to be in an audience listening to somebody deliver a paper. Do you want them to talk to you in straightforward language, telling you exactly what the argument is, or do you want them to use highfalutin, poncy academic language that obscures more of the argument than it reveals? Well, obviously, in the way that I've asked the question, you know that I think you want people to give you the argument simply, straightforwardly. And that also works when the boot's on the other foot. When you're the person addressing the audience, you should try to do the same. Unnecessarily complicating the argument can exclude the audience from engaging with your ideas. But what are you doing at the conference in the first place if it's not to get people to engage with your ideas? So please be attentive to their needs in that respect. Be respectful of the situation that your audience finds themselves in. Members of your audience might well be suffering from what's known within the profession as conference fatigue. And by conference fatigue, I don't just mean a hangover. Although lots of people do turn up to academic panels at conferences with a hangover, especially when they've been out to a nightclub until 4:30 in the morning, Christopher Clark. Oh, and Andy.
He wasn't presenting.
No, he wasn't presenting, but you turned up as well the next morning, didn't you, first thing? And you?
I remember, yeah, Andrew.
Yeah, I did turn up, but I didn't remember. I'm joking.
So you can vouch for conference fatigue along those lines. But also, if you go to a conference over 2 days, there is a lot of socialising and networking to do. You might also be sitting in 8 panels running, where you're being presented with 3 papers per panel, every one of which keeps your attention. You really have to try hard to concentrate. So there's that element of conference fatigue as well. Conferences wear you out. They are tiring. And if they're tiring for the audience, addressing them in as simple a manner as possible obviously helps them. So that would be my final point about the presentations. Now let me get onto the paper and try to cover this aspect of it much more quickly. Well, in the first instance, the paper is what you concentrate your time on. And what should you write your paper on? Well, to an extent, this will probably be at least partially determined for you by the theme of the conference or the workshop or of the panel you've been invited to contribute to. That will give you a very clear steer as to the sort of thing that's expected of you. As an aside, for those people that haven't been to a conference yet, let me just tell you how the process works. Firstly, conferences or workshop organisers will publish a call for papers on a particular theme. And they do this through all of the professional email lists. You will probably find that your inbox is bombarded with things that get passed on by me to the secretaries and then on to you. That's the way that we all learn about the conferences and workshops that are out there. And I will continue to pass on all the ones that come my way. Once you've identified a conference or a workshop whose theme looks as though it appeals to you, you can respond to the call for papers. You write an abstract and you submit this to the conference organisers. The third stage is then the programme organiser for the conference makes a decision as to which papers will be invited to be presented at the conference. If you get the green light at this stage, if you're abstract is accepted, then you get the formal go-ahead to write the paper itself. So that's the process that you will go through. So what about the content of the paper you do write? Well, it's a brave PhD student who commits themselves to writing a conference paper that's not of direct relevance to their PhDs. And by brave in that sentence, I probably mean foolhardy. It maybe isn't the most sensible thing to do, to commit yourself to writing endless papers that are nothing at all to do with your PhD. My advice is to treat conference papers as a way of approaching interim objectives for your PhD, so they can become a handy early deadline. if you've got a chapter to write on a particular topic and a conference comes up on a related topic, then writing the paper for the conference gives you an early deadline for then transforming that paper into the PhD thesis chapter that can subsequently emerge out of it. Now, here's me giving this very good advice. Not that I ever followed any of it when I was a PhD student. I recklessly committed myself to delivering papers on endless numbers of topics that were absolutely nothing to do with my PhD. I'm not sure that was the best use of my time, though. If I had that time again, I hope I would be more disciplined in what I did in terms of my conference presentations and conference paper writing. I hope I would go to the same number of conferences that I went to when I was a PhD student, but I hope that I would organise my writing time in such a way where delivering those papers themselves helped me meet interim PhD deadlines in terms of chapter writing. Remember, it's your PhD work through which you will start to develop an academic reputation. So it's your PhD work that you really want people to become familiar with within the profession. So it's your PhD work that you really want to use as the basis for your conference papers. It's your PhD work that you want to present to people in public. And don't be worried about the prospect of delivering pretty much the same paper to three or four different audiences if the theme that you're working on suddenly gets advertised as being the organising theme for a number of different workshops or conferences, all in very close proximity to one another. Now, this is more good advice that I still conspicuously fail to take. I continue to commit myself to writing endless newspapers for workshops and conferences when, strictly speaking, there is no need for me to do that. I think I must just have developed some sort of mental block in this respect. I'm not sure I've ever delivered the same paper twice at different workshops or conferences. I cannot believe that this is a good use of my time now. I also think that there's a very good reason in terms of CV fillers for you to be much more sensible in your use of time than I've always been. There's nothing wrong at all with just changing the introduction and conclusion of a particular paper to make it fit the specific theme of a different workshop, and then pretty much present the same paper twice or three times or four times. Be sure, however, to give them all different titles. Not just marginally different titles, but as different as you can make the titles. This is a really useful CV filler when it comes to developing an academic CV that you might then take forward into the academic job market. Okay, as a member of the shortlisting committee, I might be slightly suspicious that this is what you're doing, but at the same time, if it looks as though you've given four different presentations of the same thing with the same title, that doesn't look as good on your CV if it's four different presentations of the same thing but with different titles. So do be strategic and slightly instrumental in terms of the titles that you give your papers. So my last set of comments. What about the style of the paper that you write? Well, I've got two warnings, I think, here, as much as anything. A complete cut-and-paste job from PhD chapters doesn't usually work ideally. And that's because they're designed for different purposes. A PhD chapter is part of a bigger piece of work, so it's framed in a very different way to how you would frame a standalone conference paper. The standalone conference paper has to look as if it has a distinct beginning, middle, and end, is that if it coheres as an individual piece of work that doesn't imply prior knowledge drawn from a previous piece of work, i.e. a previous chapter of the PhD, and that closes down all the arguments that are raised within that piece of work. That's what your conference paper should do. So it shouldn't really be a complete cut and paste job from a completed PhD chapter. Obviously, if you're under pressure with PhD deadlines and you find that you've got until a week before you're due at the conference and you have to submit a paper, then it's better just to give them a PhD chapter, probably with a different introduction and different conclusion. having searched for all the times the word chapter appears and replacing it with the word paper. So not in this chapter, I argue, but in this paper, I argue. And if those deadlines do become so oppressive that that's the only thing you can do, that's better than nothing. That's better than not submitting a paper. But if you have a long time to think about it and to prepare the paper itself, try to write it in such a way that it's based on your PhD chapters, so you're helping yourself meet those interim PhD deadlines. But at the same time, even though it's recognisably similar to that PhD chapter, it doesn't follow the PhD chapter completely in terms of its form and its focus. It must have its own clearly specified set of objectives, and you must write it around those clearly specified objectives. Also, make sure that your conference paper is constructed along manageable proportions. I'm also convinced that it's very, very difficult to successfully rewrite the whole of your PhD as a single paper. Because if you try to do that, there's obvious reasons for wanting to do that, but you will find that you're trying to cover too much ground in a single conference paper. You'll be trying to cram in too much literature, too many focal points, and this is at the expense of the depth, the analytical depth of the argument. So you want it to be a standalone piece that's written along manageable proportions. So you're looking for about 8,000 words that's written in terms of its own clearly specified objectives, built around its own self-contained arguments, and constructed, in other words, so that it should look just like a journal article in both dimensions and internal character. The more that you can get into the habit of writing conference papers as if they are journal articles, the better. Because a journal wouldn't accept an article that was clearly cut and pasted from a PhD chapter. Equally, very, very difficult to envisage getting accepted for a journal a condensation of a whole PhD within 8,000 words. So try to construct your conference paper to follow the pattern of writing you're familiar with from all of the journal articles that you've read. Try to base it on your PhD chapter, but modify its form so it begins to resemble a journal article more than anything else. In conclusion, I think it's a very, very good thing that the best conference papers look like journal articles, because presumably one of the reasons that you might want to commit yourself to writing a conference paper in the first place is that so you can get the feedback from the members of the audience at the conference to then reflect that feedback back into a rewritten paper which you can then submit as a possible journal article. It's another instance, I think, of killing two birds with one stone, that the conference paper itself provides you with a perfect opportunity to write the first draft of a piece of work that you can then subsequently rewrite in order to send it off for review at a journal. There's a clear correlation between receiving an acceptance notice from a journal editor and the number of conference outings an argument has had prior to that. The more that work is exposed to audiences in public, the more feedback that you get from it, the more finely honed the argument is likely to be, the more that it's likely to survive the process of peer review when you send it off to the journal for consideration for publication. Conceptualise, if this helps, your audience as an informal peer review mechanism that precedes the formal peer review that you will get when you submit your article for consideration to a journal. So it's always very useful, I think, to envisage your relationship with your audience at a conference in that way. This is another example of meeting more than one objective in one go and consequently managing your time successfully. My last piece of advice is once again about timing, but slightly different to my first piece of advice. That's to think very carefully about the way that conferences fit into your whole programme of study for your PhD. if you devoted too much time, like I did when I was a PhD student, to writing unconnected papers to deliver at conferences, what you will find is that this necessarily incurs a trade-off with the time that you have at your disposal to work on your PhD. So the more that you can conceptualise yourself approaching two objectives at once in your conference paper writing, so writing the paper for the conference, but also allowing that task to help you make progress with your PhD objectives as well, the better. And if you settle into a rhythm of that nature, I'm sure that going to conferences, presenting your work in public, will be very, very useful when it comes to making progress on your PhD as well. Thank you very much.